Mittelhof. We remain at the Rehwiese and proceed to Kirchweg 31, to the Mittelhof Country House and Garden. Here we have come to a place with a turbulent history. During the First World War, the famous Berlin architect Hermann Muthesius designed this building complex for the entrepreneur and industry magnate Wilhelm Mertens. Originally, the design envisaged the construction of an idyll, but I think the whole thing looks rather gloomy. What do you think? The massive house presses deep into the terrain, which slopes down to the Rehwiese. The dark pine trees and the house make an ideal location for a horror film, don't you think? It also reminds me a little of a Lower Saxon manor house. You too? The Mittelhof was built on the model of English country houses. The property can only be entered through a wide wooden gate that opens onto a 70-meter-long birch-lined avenue leading to the building. The architectural design of a central square, from which the remaining parts emanate, established the name Mittelhof. The naming surprised everyone at the time, as it was customary for new villas to be named after the first people to live there. But who was the owner who had this 600-square-meter property built for himself, his wife, and their four children? You already know his name, Wilhelm Mertens. Although the family of this increasingly well-known entrepreneur enjoyed the advantages of the villa quarter in its prime location and surrounded by Berlin's upper middle classes, he sealed himself and his family off from the outside world on his property. I would now like to go into more detail about his activities as a trader in colonial goods. Surely you are aware that trading in goods from the colonies must be viewed against the background of the exploitation of the colonies and slavery. The current critical view and recognition of the violence and suffering of the population of former colonies due to their exploitation started very late and is still far from being widespread enough. Mertens also drew wealth and prestige from this process of exploitation through his activity as a colonial trader. He traded with various plantation companies, especially in rubber and bananas. He also traded with mining and commodity syndicates who extracted metals such as tin, gold, and ore. Mertens carried out his questionable business in colonies in Africa as well as Southeast Asia. Following a legal case against him, his reputation as a trader was damaged. Nevertheless, shortly after the proceedings, he commissioned one of the most famous architects of the time to build his new residence. However, the outbreak of the First World War meant that Mertens was no longer able to access his funds held abroad and therefore fell into arrears with the payments for the house. The Treaty of Versailles forced Germany to cede its colonies, so Mertens also lost his properties there. After the First World War, the family did finally move into their new home, but only 2 years later, due to lack of income, they were forced to move to a smaller property. That was still a very stately villa, very close to the one here, but it was only about half the size. No other family would ever move into Muthesius's extravagant villa again. The former trader in colonial goods sold his house to the two Henkel von Donnersmarck brothers, who used the property as a headquarters for their burgeoning real estate business. The Henkel von Donnersmarck brothers sold it again, and in 1938, the Nazi Reichskulturkammer set up its office here. I'm sure you've heard of it in your history class. The main goal of the Reich Chamber of Culture was the state organization, supervision and control of culture. Accordingly, the Reich Chamber of Culture served to bring culture into line in order to control all areas of society. Anyone working in the field of art and culture had to join a specific chamber. Those who could not provide proof of Aryan origin were not admitted, or if they already belonged to a chamber, were excluded again. By the way, the position in the National Socialist hierarchy determined the allocation of rooms in the villa. The head of the Reich Chamber of Culture naturally moved into the most prestigious and imposing room, the dining hall with its barrel vault. The large entrance hall became the waiting room for supplicants, and the other rooms housed chambers for the Reich propaganda ministry. The so-called Künstlerdank, a donation office of the Dr. Joseph Goebbels Foundation for actors in need, was set up on the lower floor. With Law No. 2 of the 10th of October 1945, the Reich Chamber of Culture was banned by the Allied Control Council and its property was confiscated. US soldiers maintained an officers' club in the Mittelhof after the war. Subsequently, people from the old people's home of deaconesses from East Prussia moved in. Can you imagine why the Muthesius Villa was almost demolished after the sisters moved out in the mid-1970s? The maintenance of the house was too expensive, the space too large, and the location too far from the city centre. Fortunately, the Volkswagen Foundation supported the preservation of the villa and acquired it for the Historical Commission of Berlin, which still conducts its research on regional history in the imposing property. It now shares the building with another research centre, Zentrum Moderner Orient. So today, a completely different atmosphere prevails here. Every day, experts from the fields of history, sociology, anthropology, psychology, and economics come together in the Mittelhof. At noon, they meet for lunch in the wood-panelled 64-square-metre large entrance hall, under whose ceiling a model of a two-masted sailing ship used to hang. Not much of the original furnishings remain. Yes, you're right. It's really fascinating what history some buildings can remind us of. Unfortunately, the Mittelhof is not open to the public. But during the annual Open Monument Day, you can also discover the moving history of the Mittelhof from the inside.